I'm really talking about cross-selling. What else can you sell your church that you don't offer? When you get in there, what else is this church going to be potentially spending money on? Are they going to be painting the inside? Do they need any construction, any handymen? Any kind of service they would need, you could hook up with a service provider and refer them business and take a piece of the action. So you say, well, I don't know what else to sell them other than what I've already sold them. But you can sell them and team up with a provider anything that they would need in the future because you've got the trust. Hi, this is Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Get ready. Here's another 50-minute recording with a gentleman named Frank. It's always a pleasure when I'm called upon to put my HMA consulting hat in order to help business owners. Now, Frank is the owner of Acoustical Sound and Lighting Company. He has listened to several of my audios on my site, HardToFindSeminars.com. He contacted me for a consultation about how he can modify his marketing to grow his business. Now, in this recording, you'll hear me take Frank through the first steps of what any HMA consultant does. They take him through what's called an opportunity analysis. I invite you to follow along as I ask Frank questions, and you'll hear him provide the answers. You'll see how much I discover about Frank's business, his history, and its current operation and in relationship to his customers. We subsequently discuss what a USP is and what Frank's USP might be. I probe Frank with questions about what makes his company different from its competitors and why people should do business with him. We talk about how Frank currently deals with his prospects and closes sales. You'll hear me explain some ways that Frank could modify how he explains why his company is better to his prospects in simple ways that could be integrated into a consistent message that he as an employee present about the company, either in person, on paper, on his website, or by phone. This is implementing the USP. Now, in the area of leveraging current marketing processes, we talk about how Frank could educate his prospects by offering them an audio CD to educate them about all the details of acoustical sound and lighting, as well as his USP before even meeting with them. The goal here is to increase Frank's closing ratio. We go on to talk about reactivating Frank's past customers, as well as alliance opportunities and cross-selling opportunities that will instantly result in more sales for Frank. So get ready. We cover a lot, and it goes fast, so let's get started. Okay. Well, let me do this. I'll take a look at your website. I'll go on the shelves and see if I have these two products, and maybe we can talk some more. What it comes down to is time or money. Either you got the time and the tenacity to stick with it and implement the stuff yourself. Implementation is everything. Or you can hire an expert to do it for you. You know, and hiring someone's going to cost you more money than doing it yourself. But once it gets done, it's an investment in your business that as long as it pans out and works, just depends on the asset you have in the business. And then maybe what if you want to do, I can spend some time. I do all kinds of recordings on my site. Maybe I can use you as a case study. I'll take a look at your site, and then I'll determine. Maybe we can spend an hour on the phone, and I'll take you through a process called the opportunity analysis, and I'll dig through your business and talk to you about what you got going, and we'll look for hidden assets, hidden marketing assets that you're not tapping into. And then if we can find them, I'll show you and demonstrate to you how we can utilize those assets without you spending more money on advertising, all just from the assets you're sitting on right now. And then I'm certain I can share some things for you to think about, simple ways to grow your business. I can record the call. I'll send you a recording of the call, and you can benefit from my advice that I give you over the phone at no expense. And then you can decide you want to do it yourself, or would you like to hire someone? Because I have trained marketing consultants who are trained in a system that I market called the HMA system. It's a marketing consultant who are trained in this proven system on how to grow the business. And the guy who developed it was a J. Abraham protege, but he went out and grew. He went out and consulted from starting from nothing. This guy named Richard J. already had millions of dollars in the bank, so it was easy. He had assets, he had contacts and stuff like that, but this guy went out and started from the trenches. So a lot of what J. taught in the real world for a guy wanting to grow his business really didn't have validity. But we've got a pretty good system that's proven in growing businesses geometrically if the owner is on the same team as the consultant and is willing to implement.
Well, I would be happy for you. Here's another question, because I'm always thinking that I mean, you know, the Covey thing, win-win or no deal.
Yeah.
How do you, what do you get out of this?
Well, I have trained consultants. I may be willing, if you're interested, to take you on as a client, or I could farm you off and recommend or refer a trained HMA consultant in your area or close to you. What I get, if I was to charge you, if I was to take you on, I would charge you. So I would get fees out of it, and I don't do a contingency. I charge per project, kind of like the Sandler. We ask for, you know, to be paid per project, and there's about 7 or 8 projects that we can take any business through. But it depends, again, I don't even know if I take you on as a client, because I only take on clients that are sitting on assets that are easy to tap into. If you don't have the assets, I'm not interested in growing a business from the ground up. But it doesn't sound like you're in that vein, but that's what the hour opportunity analysis would do for me to determine if you're right for me or if I'm right for you. What you get out of it is you get my consulting advice for free for an hour. What I get out of it is another recording that I can use on my site to train my new consultants and existing consultants on how to do it right, how to take a business who's interested in growing and how to take them through this opportunity analysis. So I get additional training for them.
Okay, and then if you do refer me to somebody, that's part. You've got a obligation, may not be the right word, but you've got an obligation or responsibility, or you're trying to give them some referrals. That's part of your deal with them. So I help you fulfill that if I make it over the board.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so that's how you. I just, you know, the too good to be true deals usually aren't.
No. Yeah, no.
I wanted to make sure there was a balance, because otherwise.
Yeah,
getting all this free help.
That's right. I don't have to. You know, it just depends on what. You know, I do have a lot going now. It just depends on where you're at, how long, you know, how fast do you want to get going on this? If I felt like I couldn't deliver on that, I would just I would refer you over to someone else who I thought could. If you're not in a huge rush and it looks like, you know, we want to work together, then I could take you on as well.
Well. The things you're saying are interesting to me, and it does make sense. I would be perfectly willing for you to record me and use me, you know, to help somebody else do better. And I'd love to give you the opportunity to see what I'm doing, because in my gut, I believe that everybody you meet is doing something stupid they could be better at.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, you're just too close to it.
I'm just looking at it, and so. I can look at your thing and say, oh, well, this is stupid. Why don't you do so-and-so? And you can look at mine.
That's right.
But we can't either one of us do it for our own self.
That is exactly right. All right. So I got your name. I got your number. Just give me – I won't be getting back with you today, but let's say tomorrow or Wednesday.
All right. If you could check, those two titles, because I'm kind of obligated to buy those from Chris.
Okay.
Unless you just thought that was nuts.
No. They're great. And at the price I can get them, if I have them at the price I'm offering, it's a steal. They're very good.
All right. Well, that'll help me, too, because I'll be the hero if I can bring it in for cheaper than we thought.
Okay, great. All right.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, Frank. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Frank, I don't know how much I told you about what I did the last time we talked on the phone or who I am and why we're talking today. So let me tell you a little bit about what we do. Now, what I do and what my company does is I work with business owners, people like yourself, and I help them to maximize their marketing success. Most of my clients are small to medium-sized companies with sales under $5 million per year. We work in a unique marketing approach, and we look at all of your marketing assets, and I find ways to leverage and optimize your success from the assets you already have in place. And because we try and leverage existing assets, you can often realize sometimes dramatic profit and growth without having to invest a lot of money or make a lot of significant changes in your operation. So what I'd like to do today is take a look at your business and see where you are, where you're going, and how you're getting there, and see if we might come up with some ways that we can help your business grow. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we work strictly on a project-by-project basis. Depending on what we do, the fee is usually anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 per project. And most businesses I work with fall into one of these three different situations. One is they're doing okay but want to do better, or they're stagnant and there's no growth, or their business is declining. Tell me where you are now.
I think we're doing okay and we want to be better. We're in between there and stagnant. I guess we're the okay, want to be better.
All right, so you want to be better. Do you have any kind of idea of how much better you want to be as far as growth percentage-wise, say, in the next year?
This past year, we'll probably do $800,000 in sales, and we'll actually break even or make a little money. Last year, we did $1.2 million, and I think we lost money. And the year before that, we were way smaller and made money and only did like $350,000 or $400,000 with like two or three employees. So I want to move my numbers toward last year's numbers, but I want to keep my profit where I'm at now.
How much potential growth could you handle right now without having to invest too much more money? What if you started generating 25% more customers in growth? Could you handle that?
I don't know that we could handle 25% growth. My goal would be if we can get the phone to ring a lot more, we can call out the losers. Right now, we'll help just about anybody, and some of them are a real waste of our time because we'll charge them a grand, and we'll work for 3 days to get $1,000, and long term, that's not a smart move because that's not enough. But right now, we take them anyway. If twice as many people were calling, we'd throw out the $1,000 for three-day deals, and we'd only have the good deal.
All right, why do you do this? Give me a brief history. What's your company called, and how did you get started with this? Just give me a little background on your business and what your business is and who it services.
The company name is Acoustical. We're a sound, lighting, and video company. We do consulting design-type work, and we also do installation service-type work. So I would quantify us as a service company and not a product sales company, although there is some product sales involved.
Are you the founder?
I'm the founder. I had a company before this for 10 years. I sold that company and started this one, and this is 10 years later.
What was the company you sold? Same type company?
Yeah, it was called Sound and Lighting, and I was in a partnership, and it was difficult because my goal was to do permanently installed and consulting work, and their goal was to do live events and shows and those kinds of things. It was just a partnership, and we had differing goals, and we were too young when we started to realize that we ought to understand each other's goals.
So you sold out to him?
I did.
Okay, and you started your own thing.
Yeah, and I got out alive, which is more than a lot of people do.
Okay, that's good.
I didn't make a ton of money, but I got out alive.
Okay, so where are you located?
We're in South Carolina.
All right, so you're right in the metropolitan area?
Yeah.
Where's most of your business coming from?
It's coming from within 20 or 30 miles of here, a radius.
Who would you say your main competitors are?
We've got a couple of them. We've got a company called Pro Audio, which has a significantly bigger market share, does a lot higher volume, but their price is typically 20% or 30% lower than ours. They're not nearly as design-focused as we are. In fact, I don't think they're at all design-focused, so the jobs they put in don't work right, and 3 or 4 years later, we could get their client, but they've sold all the gear and made the money on the gear.
Are you selling gear?
We are selling gear. Yeah, we do sell a fair amount of equipment, but we're not like a Best Buy, a showroom, come buy stuff from us. We're more come talk to us about a solution, and then in the end, we end up selling them speakers and microphones and projectors and lights because that's what they need to get there.
Do you inventory all that stuff?
We typically only buy for a job, so we don't have a lot of gear just sitting on the shelf. We figure out what you need, we make a deal with you, we get you to put some money down on it, and then we buy the stuff, and when it comes in, we go install it and make it work.
All right, so that's one competitor, and you said they're not as good as what you're doing, and they're more focused on gear, and their prices are less. Who else would you consider your competition out there?
Ace is still here, and they're still in town, and their competition, although they're a lot more focused on shows, live events, and their own installation.
All right.
So they're a competitor. There's a couple of real big dogs. There's a company which has probably got 10 or 15 offices on the North Carolina, South Carolina. There are some other pretty large companies. I'm trying to think. It's hard to know who we actually come up against directly. But these are big corporate entities with a couple of three salesmen in an office. I guess they've got crews that come in 2 or 3 hours away to do the installations. And then there's a handful of just mom and pop that are real small, like a couple of guys doing installations.
Yeah, what's your business look like? How many employees you got?
We've got 10, and that includes a girl that answers the phone and some clerical people, but it includes 5 or 6 technical people. I'm kind of technical, and I'm kind of sales, and I'm kind of design.
How would you break down your type of customers?
We've got probably, I want to say, 30% maybe of our volume is home theater. We've got another 45 or so percent of our volume, maybe even 50% that's churches. And then the balance is some sort of corporate entity. Maybe it's it's a hospital with a little meeting room that just needs a projector hung, or maybe it's a restaurant that needs a paging system and background music, you know, miscellaneous strewn over a wide range or the balance of the client.
Okay. Who's the ideal clients? Where's the money in this business?
I don't know for sure where the money is. I always perceive the ideal client as being a church who's got a acoustical problem or a lighting problem where they can't see the projection well, or a boardroom or corporate person who's got lots of equipment, but when you get ready to do a presentation, there's three or four remote controls, and you've got to bumble around with this stuff, and it's hard to make it work, and sometimes they can't get it to work right. Or else a home theater that's got the same thing, three or four remote controls, and they're not sure how to get it to work. In my mind, those are the people with serious pain. They don't like where they are. They're having problems with what they do, and it doesn't work for them, and they're the ones that will pay to get you to come in and straighten out their problem. I don't have any basis for that other than just your gut.
All right. I want to talk about USP. You may have heard of this. USP stands for Unique Selling Proposition. And in this part, I want to look for an under-promoted USP, including your experience, a competitive advantage over your competition, a price advantage, what differentiates you from your competition, any unique products or guarantees or unique benefits or services that you offer. So I want to ask you, why should people do business with you rather than someone else? How are you different?
How are we different?
Yeah.
There's several different ways we're different. First of all, I'm an electrical engineer by training. We've got at least one other engineer on staff that's got an engineering degree. We are focused on how stuff works and figuring out where you want to get before you take off. We don't ever go on a trip without a map, and we don't ever go to put in a sound system without knowing what the objective is we're trying to accomplish. We differ there because a lot of companies go in and they've got a whole lot of model XYZ on the floor, and they come in and they say, yeah, you know, this is our most popular model. We'll hang it up here. I'm sure you'll love it. But they've not done any analysis, any technical engineering, any acoustical analysis or light meter readings or anything like that in the space where the equipment's supposed to be installed. And so they're really taking an educated guess.
They're going out there on the first visit and they're going to recommend and sell equipment before they even analyze what's going to be best for the customer?
They're going on the first visit. They walk around and talk. They go back to their office. Their design or their plan is based on what they have in stock or what they're getting a good deal on. It is not based on measurements that they've taken in the field and design work that they've done.
Because they're product-focused.
They are very product-focused.
They're in business to move product and make money, right?
That's correct.
On the other hand, you're not interested in selling product because that's not what you do. Your main focus is blank.
While I'm interested in selling product, my main focus is in understanding what the client needs, the problems he has now that he wants to solve, and figuring out the right products that'll get him solved, and figuring out how to get them programmed and configured and installed and hooked up to each other so that he gets his problem solved.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Now, tell me, when you get a call from someone and they explain that they have a problem over the phone, what's your system? How do you handle that customer from the time the phone rings?
Typically, the phone rings, they talk to us, hey, this is so-and-so, we've got this problem, and I'll say, well, you know what, appreciate you calling, how'd you hear from us? And they tell us how they were referred, and I say, well, great, tell me a little bit about why you called, and they start telling me we have an XYZ problem, and I'll ask them a lot of questions about the problem. And at some point in the discussion, I say, well, can I tell you a little bit about our company? We may not be right for you, we're not right for everybody, but people that have been a good fit typically have problem A, problem B, or problem C, and I throw out three pretty broad types of things, kind of like you did with me at the beginning, people who want to grow, people who are just maintaining, and people who are dying.
Yeah.
I throw out three kind of broad characteristics or three groupings, but I try to make sure that one of those, number two or number three, is some of the stuff they've already told me. So then they can say, oh my goodness, that's exactly what's wrong. Well, sure it is. You just told me that 2 minutes ago. But we talk about that. I say, I don't know whether it makes any sense, but if you'd like us to come meet with you, we'll be happy to look at your space, talk with you, and see if we think we can help you. So then we go for a meeting. Our hope is to get several people there. Hopefully, if there's three or four that are going to make a decision, we can get them all there. We go, we look to make sure that, in fact, what we're looking at is really what we think we're looking at, because you could be mistaken on the phone and get there and find something different than you thought. Seldom happens, but when it does, you can tell them this is not a good fit. We would like to, on the initial meeting, either charge them a couple of $300 for a little bit of tuning work, a little bit of adjustment work we could do that would help them in the immediate future. We'd like to get them to agree to spend somewhere between $500 and $2,500 in design fees so we can make some testing and measurement and produce a solution for them, or some kind of a connection where they can decide to buy. And decide to buy needs to have a little bit of money attached.
You don't charge to go out on site, do you?
We don't charge to go on site, but once we get there, our goal is to turn this into a money-making trip.
All right, go ahead.
So our agreement on the phone before we come see you would be along the lines of, Michael, we're going to come see you. One of three things is going to happen. Maybe we're going to get out there and see that what you've got is different than what I was thinking, and I'll just explain to you I don't think I can help you. You comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Second thing that might happen is sometimes we get out, we see that there's some fundamental things we could do, adjustments, different types of configuration things, the kinds of things we could just do. We've got some tools in the car, and we will just look at it as kind of like a service call. That's $85 an hour, and we'll spend 2, 3, 4 hours working on some stuff and get that fixed. And that'll really solve most of your problem. You didn't need anything but just some adjustments. The third possibility would be that we identify in our meeting another choice, something else that makes sense to you, and it would mean spending some money, but we don't know what money because we don't know what we're talking about yet. So if we decide when we get there it should be bigger, great. If we decide it should be a service call with you, great. And if we decide there's no fit, great. When we go there, our goal is to figure out, first of all, can we even help you, which normally we can, because we're good at identifying on the phone whether you're a fit. And hopefully we're going to either figure out, hey, this could be a service call, we charge you 2 or 3 hours, we'll do these little adjustments, or we'll enter into some kind of a design or some kind of a consulting agreement where we're going to send you an invoice for $1,000 to do these measurements to fix these problems you got.
Let's stop there, and we're going to come back, but I want to ask you, what else makes you different? You've described some things, and you've mentioned this over the phone. You give them a little explanation of why they should choose you. You do that with all potential good prospects by phone?
I'm not sure that it really happens every single time. We know how to, and we know we're supposed to, and then the question is just, do we do it?
Yeah, how many different people are answering the phone?
There's three guys that do sales, including myself, and there's 2 or 3 people that would potentially answer the phone, and like the receptionist answer, she doesn't do any of that. She sends it to a sales guy.
Is there one sales guy out closing more than others?
I'm probably closing more than anybody else. Oh, I am closing more than anybody else. I'll be specific. That way it's not so general. One guy, half-time, he's a customer service manager. Somebody calls with a service call, an existing client. He writes up the order, makes sure we get it scheduled and gets it handled, and calls him back after we've done the work to say, is everything working good? And his other job is a sales job. So when somebody calls in, he gets a lot of those calls.
All right.
Second guy is a pure commission guy. He does only residential sales. He's supposed to just talk with people on the phone, go see them, close deals, and maybe do a wee little bit of design work or some sketches of kind of what they're going to buy. But that's his main job, and that's how he's paid. And then I'm the third guy. I do some sales like what I was just describing. Mine are typically bigger, and they're commercial most of the time. And I'm also doing design, and I'm also thinking about the business and trying to do strategic planning and marketing and all kinds of other things that are unrelated. So I'll get a $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 deal that comes through every month or every couple of months. Mine are big deals. The home theater guy's deals could be a $3,000 deal, or it could be a $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000. You know, a big deal for me is going to be $100,000.
But you know, when you're pitching a big deal, you're giving them a little bit about yourself. You're letting them know that you got an engineering background. You're letting them know some reasons why they should consider you, just like you were explaining to me. Would that be fair to say?
I'm letting them know some of that stuff, but I'm not letting them know it in an overt way. I'm not going in and saying, well, here's why you should buy from us, because we got engineers and we got the technical training and the measurement tools and all this. I actually will ask them questions. I'll say, so I know you guys have talked to several people. When the other guys sent their engineers in and y'all evaluated their credentials, how did that go? To which they either say, I don't know, they didn't talk about that, or they say, well, they didn't really have any engineering credentials. And I can say, well, is it important that you get somebody with engineering capability? Help me understand why that didn't come up in the conversation. So my goal is to make them figure out that the other guy's less qualified, but instead of telling them he's less qualified, because you're not supposed to poo-poo your competition, I just ask him, when he showed you all his credentials and told you his test equipment and explained their process, how did that seem to you? How did it feel? Did it make sense? And most everybody else in the business doesn't have an organized process.
Right.
So they kind of assume that since I'm bringing it up, it must exist. And at some point, I'll talk to them a little about it. it, but I don't present it as, hey, this is the deal you need to buy.
All right. Well, this is all about a USP, and it's a unique selling proposition. But, you know, you can't assume that they're going to figure it out. A lot of these people are clueless. That's why they're calling you. They don't know that having an engineering background is important. All they're focused on is getting their problem taken care of, and that's why they're talking to you. And you may come out better by overtly letting them know why you're qualified, that you have an engineering background, all the advantages of why someone should choose you rather than someone else, and preempt it. Give it to them even before they ask. And if you do this, or all your salespeople do it, and this could all be scripted out in a paragraph or two, which is easy to memorize or easy to read, and as long as it's a consistent message, especially from the first time the phone rings, you give them some reasons why someone should consider even furthering the process with you, I think you're going to come out a lot better doing that. And not only you, but anyone who handles the phone, and any time a potential customer considers using you for your service, and that could be even on your website. I was just looking at the website. You've got a lot of room on that website, and I don't know if you get any business from the website, but you know, those two paragraphs or three paragraphs, or even on a website, it could be a whole detailed audio recording about you, your services, and really give a lot of good information, whether it's an audio recording or typed out in a transcript form or in the form of a consumer's guide to audio engineering brought to you by Acoustical. It's a little infomercial that educates your prospect first about maybe the 10 biggest mistakes that people do before setting up their home theater system, or 12 common misconceptions about setting up your lighting and projection system that'll save you headaches. And, you know, you offer value to your potential customers. You educate them first. With some of them, you can have a better chance at selling them. So it's really just giving them reasons why. But the unique selling proposition, that method that makes you different, that really hits on the pain points of that potential prospect, whether it's the home theater guy or the church or all the miscellaneous other ones. You could have three different unique selling propositions for each one of your markets. But that one that really hits the frustration point, that's real clear for them to understand, that could really help you get more sales, as long as that message is consistent. And it should be consistent in everything. It should be on your invoices. It should be on the on-hold message. It should be even integrated into when the receptionist answers the phone. It's really powerful when you get it working in all areas of your business, so people understand who you are, why you're different, and what you stand for in a real succinct message. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is my goal to get them information? I mean, I can send them out information. Like, we could create a sheet with a checklist of 10 things you want to make sure of with your lighting and projection, for example. And we could put that on the website. I don't know how you do it exactly, where they have to click on the thing and put their email address or something, and then you give them this free report. We don't own that free report yet. We have to write it.
There's all kinds of things that we can integrate this information into all your marketing and your marketing processes. I'm just trying to show you one step of the system, creating a unique selling proposition, something that makes you unique, that's easy for any first-time potential customer who's going to do business with you to understand what separates you from your competition. And you've given me a couple ideas, and there may be even more, but I'm just talking for the consultants who are listening to this. They're going to work with you to determine and what that unique proposition for your business can be, that can be integrated all over your business. And having that one unique proposition will help your business grow. And if it's integrated in all areas of your business, anyone who potentially does business with you guys will understand clearly what that is. Do you see how that could help your business grow, as long as you have one succinct message and everyone's on the same page telegraphing that message?
Yeah.
You're the one selling the big deals. If everyone had the passion like you have, it's your baby. That's why you're always going to do better than anyone else, because you care more. And a customer who calls, especially a big one, you're going to give them your all and your best pitch, and it's going to come across because you're the boss. Your salespeople probably don't care as much as you.
Hopefully they do, but probably not. You're right. You'd like them to care, but I'm not sure they do.
Yeah. No one cares like the owner of the business. That's just the reality.
As I'm thinking about unique selling propositions, there's a couple of other things. I believe that we fundamentally listen better. We are more tuned into hearing what they say. So when they say, I'm having a problem and I can't hear, we don't say, well, listen, you're going to love this new speaker. We say, tell me more about can't hear. Where can't you hear? When can you not hear? What have you tried to do about it? How did that work? And so I think that we are much more connected. We've got better communication channel between us and the potential client, because we really, as a consultant would do, ask them to explain the problem. Everybody else hears the we can't hear and says, oh my goodness, you know what you need is this thing I saw the other day. Yeah, this would be great. Here, let me show you what it looks like.
They're not listening to the prospect. You guys listen. The other people are focused on selling you something.
Correct. I think everybody in this business would say they listen, but I don't believe it's true. Maybe they wouldn't even say it. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't hit their radar, but I can't imagine they wouldn't say they listen. That seems stupid to go see somebody and not listen to what they tell you is wrong. The third thing that hit me was, even though we're engineers and techie people and in love with buttons and knobs, we understand that typically the end user wants something that's simple to work, that's three buttons on the wall that says show movie, watch videotape, watch TV. And they just want a simple and dumbed down with not a lot of buttons and knobs and controls, so it's easy to work. So that way they don't get confused and they got the stuff switched the wrong way. And whether it's combining five or six remote controls for your home theater into one touch panel, or whether it's setting up a system in a church that you could play DVDs or VCR tapes or PowerPoint and you just got a three-position switch on the wall, and that switch does all the thinking of switching the projector and switching the input, but it makes the user interface is real simple.
And you do that for your clients?
And we do that. We make the user face easy.
And I'm sure that resonates with your customers. That's one of the main pains of their experience, is that it's complicated. They got all these remotes. It's just like the guy who's got five or six remotes on the couch, one for this, one for that. It's confusing. They hate it. So simplicity is what you can provide for your clients.
And repeatability, and you're not embarrassed because you pushed the wrong button and didn't know what you were doing.
All right. And the other companies, are they focused on that, or other companies will set you up with complex systems? Have you seen that?
They may talk about making it simple to work, but in fact, when it comes time to do the deal, if it costs another $1,000 to correlate all these things into one control, instead of them approaching the client and saying, here's the package, it's $11,000 and it includes this simple control, they'll strip the control out and say it's $10,000 and here's all the stuff it'll do and we're going to make it easy, but really, it's not as easy. In other words, it's like the last 10% of the money they'd spend, they saved them a little money, but they increased the operational difficulty hugely.
Okay, so we've certainly talked about some things that separate you from the other competition and what make you unique. And certainly out of the things we talked about, we could pull out these things and create a paragraph or a saying or a slogan or something that sums it up. Now, when a consultant works with you, he doesn't dream these things up. He interviews you. He interviews your customers as well. There's four processes that a consultant will do with you and your company to determine what this unique selling proposition is, because we don't want to dream one up for you and not have it match what the market's saying. So me talking to you is just one of four steps in developing this USP. But the consultants who would work with you on this is just one project of this HMA system, Hidden Marketing Assets. But the USP always has to come first. We have to understand what you stand for, because once we get that message right, that unique statement that qualifies you and separates you from everything else, only then can we use it in the other parts of the marketing. You know, if you think about it, most people out there selling stuff are only selling on price because they don't know what they stand for. They have never figured out what makes them different. They have nothing else to sell on, and that's why you see so much price selling, even the car companies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on into the next section. It's called Leveraging Current Marketing Process. And the consultants, when they work with you, they're going to look for low closing ratio, subpar salespeople, no follow-up, upselling opportunities, packaging opportunities, current sales aides, staff allocation of time, reallocation of marketing dollars, or redirection of marketing efforts to more profitable areas. We talked about prospect to sales process, and then I stopped you, but I'm going to start where we left off. You go into the home, your job is to hopefully get some kind of paying job, whether it's engineering, design. What do you try and charge for right when you're in the phone? And let's take the process from thereafter.
The two things that would involve spending money are either you would hire us for like a service visit or a service inspection or a service call, that kind of work, or you would hire us to do some design and some engineering work. That's planning for something bigger.
Out of 10 homes you go into or 10 calls you go on to, do you have any idea on what's going to result in some kind of paying client closing ratio on some payment?
I'm going to guess, because we try to be real selective on the phone, I'm going to guess that out of 10 people who call in and say, hey, we'd like an appointment, and we actually figure out, yeah, we're going to come see you, we probably get money in some form from half of them.
Okay. And what happens to the other 50% who don't buy?
Well, we go see them. We talk a little bit, and they say, I really don't see any sense in spending any money to get design work because everybody else is going to give me a free proposal. What I call a free best guess, but what they say is the free estimate. And they say nobody else charges for a proposal, and so, you know, I guess we're just not a fit.
So you're losing business to the competitors who offer a free proposal?
Yeah, but the problem is their free proposal is a free wild guess. My proposal is an actual plan that makes sense that we know is going to work.
And what will you charge for a proposal?
Depending on the job size, obviously, but anywhere from $500 to $2,500.
Just for a proposal?
Yeah, but it's kind of like a design. It's like with an architect. An architect will do a master plan, or they'll do some kind of a planning function that's conceptual. Here's what you want. It involves them actually spending real time figuring out.
Like in a home theater situation, what's that going to cost a homeowner for a proposal?
Probably $500, $600, $700, something in that range.
Let's say they want the proposal. What happens after they say, yeah, let's do the proposal?
This is where I kind of diverge because I don't do hardly any home theater.
Someone else does it?
Yeah, Ernie does the home theater. I mean, I've done 3 home theaters in the last 2 years, and I've said to the people at that point, sounds like you need my help. Sounds like we could be a good fit. We could really help you out. Here's what I need to do. I need to send you an invoice for $300 or $400. The initial part of this, and then I'll send the balance when we're done. And we'll kind of think through. We'll come up with some budget numbers. We'll figure out how we could run wires. We'll figure out how we could hook things up. We'll figure out how you want this thing to work for you. And this is the cost to get me talking to you and to get me thinking with you and to get us sitting down at the table figuring out a good solution. And so those guys will spend $300, $400, $500 right now, and we'll start thinking about a solution. We'll measure the room or we'll do whatever. I come back to the office. We actually do a little planning. We send them a bill for the money. We usually don't get a check on the spot. We'll send them a bill for the money and they pay us. And then we'll get back together with them a couple weeks later and talk about, well, here's what we found. Normally, we don't go back in with a thorough, complete plan. Here's exactly what it is. We go back in and say, here's kind of what we're thinking. So it's kind of like a second step, but it's not the final step. And at that point, I've gone in and talked to people about $15,000 and about $12,000 and about $2,500 and $4,200, depending on what they want to fix or what they don't. So at that point, they'll identify their budget. And they say, yeah, we could see spending somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000 to fix this. Now, this big fancy TV you're talking about, I'm not sure we need that. Let's wait on the TV, but, you know, I'd love to do A and B and C that were on this list. And at that point, you're helping them understand the total cost of them doing something, and they're understanding what it's going to look like and what it's going to cost and how it's going to change their experience as well. And because they've spent $300 or $400 already, they're not going to just quit. At that point, if they do anything, they're doing it with you.
All right, so if you get them to pay for the proposal, generally what percentage end up staying with you?
I would say 90%.
Okay, that's pretty good. All right, back to the people who say we're not a fit. They don't want to pipe up for the proposal. What happens to those people?
Well, we try to get pain. You know, they say, I'm not interested in a proposal. Everybody else is free. You say, that's fine. I appreciate you sharing that. Remember we talked at the beginning of the meeting and I said, we may figure out there's not a fit. Can I tell you that I'm sensing there's not a fit between how we do this and what you need?
Okay.
They say, sure. And I said, now that we're done, can I put on my consultant hat for a minute? You know, you guys are in a lot of trouble. One of two things is happening. You're either in a lot of trouble and you just want to tell me about it, or you don't even realize it and you're in bigger trouble.
What kind of trouble do you mean?
They're going to go out and spend money, and once they spend money, they're going to realize that what they bought was a Chevrolet engine for a Ford body with Nissan hubcaps and a Cadillac radio.
They're in trouble because they're about to go with someone else if they don't go with you.
Well, yeah, but see, they don't care about that. What I think they're in trouble about is they're going to have pieces that don't work well together and don't help them get the experience they want, or it's so difficult to operate. Either the thing is incapable of giving them the experience they want, or it's capable, but it's too hard to work, so they'll never use it. That's the trouble they're in. And so we try to go in that direction. Now, that takes a lot of guts to say that to somebody, and it probably never really happens as slick as what I just told you.
See, you can preempt that with these potential clients or all your clients, with whether it's a report or an audio recording that educates them even before you guys show up.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, let's say we produce, you know, whole little one-hour recording of what's important about acoustical design, and we go through the major issues, and let's say I interviewed you about all the important things. So you divulge your secrets and your knowledge of what's important about a good home theater system or a good audiovisual system. You talk a little bit about lighting. You know, you can take the call over the phone. You can get their name, address, and information. You can set up an appointment even after you tell them the three things that are going to happen. When you hang up, you can say, what I'd like to do, Mr. Client, is I'd like to drop a little audio CD that we put together. Or you can send them to your website where they can get familiar with you and your services. So on their time, they can start listening and being educated about you, your company, and what you're going to do. And you could be pre-selling them automatically even before you show up at the appointment. And those 50% who don't want to spend the money, and even in this audio presentation or this written presentation, that can come up. Just like you're explaining, you're in a lot of trouble. You could preempt that before they get to the point and say that they're not a fit. You can tell them this information, why they may be in trouble, even before you get there. So instead of that being 50%, it may reduce down to only 20% or 15% or 30%, because you'll be able to pre-sell them before you show up. You know, these are concerns they probably never thought of until the last minute after they said they didn't want to spend the money. You sold them better before you got there.
In other words, for example, there's a recording on the website of an industry person who doesn't know us and doesn't care about us particularly and doesn't know the difference. It's just asking, why are you better, what makes you good, what makes you bad, and it's kind of a third-party look at what we're about.
That's right, absolutely.
And so they get to listen to you picking me apart on the website, and I'm explaining it to you. I'm not explaining it to them. I'm telling you the other guys are idiots. I'm not telling them that.
Yep.
And so now somehow it's different.
We position you as the expert, and there's no other company who's going to do that for them. So you've really provided a great service. You've educated them about what's important and how they're going to benefit with good lighting. And by the end, your position as the expert and your company is the one who can provide all these solutions. Now, because they're hearing it from you first about lighting and all the engineering and all the aspects of what makes the sound good and different problems people experience, you know, all the most common problems that you understand in your head based on your experience. We're going to touch on all those, and you've pre-sold your customer automatically even before you show up, increasing your sales closing ratio. And sometimes even when you've done that better and you've positioned yourself as the only logical choice, you could start upping your prices too.
Okay.
Because no one else has done that. But for this section here, the main point I want to show you is if we do a better selling job on the front end, those 50% of the people who you lose because they don't want to pay your fee, we could do better selling before to lower that percentage. So if we could get 8 out of 10 rather than 5 out of 10, do you see how that can grow your business if we take care of that gap or increase it?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I've also wondered if it's smart to lower the threshold. Right now the entry barrier is $400 or $500.
How much labor is there to putting this plan and design together? What does it cost you to put together for the customer?
You could have a more cookbook plan that wouldn't be as specific. You could probably put a less fancy plan together for $150 or $200 with the idea that you tell them this is very much a preliminary first step. It's not the plan, but it's the stuff you'll need to know to figure it out. My caution is I don't want to sit down with somebody and say, for $150, this is what you need to make sure you take care of before you buy and go see them, because my concern is I go see them and they take this list of 7 things they need to make sure of for their situation tailored to their living room, and they say, well, you know, Frank, we appreciate your help and we'll get back to you. We're going to contact 3 companies and we're going to use these criteria you've given us to figure out what we need. And at that point, where am I? I either do a free proposal and all I got was $150 for giving them the right questions to ask the next guy.
So have you seen this happen? You get out there and you do it, and then they go price shop it and use your criteria and expertise?
Yeah, I've seen people use their criteria and expertise a lot. They pick your brain, but they really believe in their heart that it's a commodity. And the 10% of it that's not a commodity, you just fix because you explain to them, buy this and don't buy that. Buy plasma, not LCD, for example, on this one situation. And they think, aha, now I don't need any more help. I'll go pick out my own plasma. I can do that at Circuit City or Best Buy. So they don't need me anymore because they think that all it is about that stuff.
Okay, but you know it's not like that, right?
Right, because they get it in the house, and now they have a problem making everything work together with simple button presses and everything simple to use. So they end up calling me back. The only problem is I've lost the plasma sale. And maybe they never call me back because they're embarrassed, because they think, well, my goodness, we picked his brain for free. We told him we'd call him back. We went and bought it on our own. It doesn't work that good, and we can't call him back.
Well, out of 10 customers, how many do you think follow that strategy?
That's a hard question. It used to be huge numbers, and since we've been doing the Sandler process, we've greatly reduced that. I'm still going to think maybe 2 out of those 5 are still shopping, or maybe 3 out of those 5.
And that still comes to education. They think they can do it on their own, but they're overlooking a lot of things they haven't considered. And I bet you can come up with 10 biggest mistakes do-it-yourselfers make when designing their home theater system. And we can identify these mistakes to them and pre-educate them and let them know why they don't want to take the chance to do it on their own. We don't have to give away all the secrets, but that can be helped in good marketing and educating your prospect beforehand. You know, you can almost give away all the secrets to your prospects, and because you've really serviced them and you've built up a trust and a bond with them that no other competitor is even going to come close to, you're going to be positioned with your best customers as the only alternative. And some people are going to take advantage of the information and use it and do what you say, but most people are pretty honest, and you'll find that you may come out better even though you're giving it your all, rather than holding back.
So you're suggesting that maybe it does make sense to have a $150 deal that's much easier to swallow.
Yeah, you got to figure out how much time does it take you or whoever puts the plan together. How much time does it take someone to put a plan together for someone?
Okay.
But you got to figure out what your cost is.
You could still lose some money, but the fact is, if a salesman goes out to talk to them and spends 2 hours with them and travels for an hour, half an hour there and half an hour back, that's 3 hours of somebody's time that you got nothing for now. So if you could convert 80% instead of 50%, there's 3 more you got there. If they see value in what you do, they're going to buy from you. I guess it's so hard to know because they do lie to you.
Yeah, they'll lie.
They don't mean to lie. They just do it without thinking.
If you wanted to offer even a free analysis of their situation, you can set some criteria. You can say, normally we charge $450 for this. However, if you want the free one, I'm going to make you jump through some hoops, and you're going to have to go to our website and listen to our presentation and pre-qualify. Make sure that they listen to the presentation before you even show up or drive the truck out there, so that they trade a little money for some time to qualify themselves.
At that point, is anybody going to spend the $450?
Oh, sure.
In other words, it seems reasonable that if you say to them, listen, I've got a budget plan where you do all the work, here's the website, or I've got a normal plan that a lot of people choose, and it's going to be around $450, $550, somewhere in that range to do a real plan. Which do you prefer? If you'd like the less expensive, let me email you a link.
Yeah, you make a little money on the plan. I'd be focused on what's going to result after the plan.
Right.
The money's made after the plan, right?
Yeah, the money's not made in the plan.
Yeah.
I mean, our struggle now is, even when you charge them a grand for a plan, the more you charge for a plan, the more qualified they are. But once you sell them a plan, the more money you've charged for the plan, the better the plan ought to be. And the more questions I got about the plan, and if they're really just cutthroat, going to ask for 3 prices and shop it all over the place, no matter how much you charge for the plan, it's a bad deal, because it'll never be enough to cover all the cost of having to do all the work you're going to have to do, and they'll still turn around and do something different. It's like a mind-reading game.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it makes more sense to just have a concrete way we do it than to try to tailor it. You know, I try to tailor it, I think, to who I'm talking to.
Well, you know, for time's sake, we can look into that and come up with solutions that the consultants can. I'm sure there's solutions, but the main thing is to increase that closing ratio. If we can increase it from 50% to 80%, you can see that over time that can give you some good growth just on that.
Right.
All right, I want to move on because I don't have a ton of time here, and I want to go to past, present, and prospective customers. And I want to look for a customer base that is not being worked, inactive customers, lack of a database, cross-selling opportunities in the business, possible back-end opportunities, and reactivation. Ballpark, I know you've got 3 different classes of customers, but what do they spend on services with you?
I'd be better talking about the churches, because that's the single biggest thing I do.
All right, let's talk about that.
So the churches would spend probably between $10,000 and $30,000 for a system. Maybe I'd say $10,000 and $50,000, depending on whether they just want one little piece of gear or whether they've got a fair amount of stuff they need to do. Most of them be upgrades. Some of them would be 90% upgrades, and some of them would be 10% upgrades. But they would be taking what they've got and adding some stuff to it to make it work better for them.
And are these clients usually just one-time clients? You know, they spend the money and you pretty much won't hear from them again? Are you getting them back as clients a second or third time for anything?
Depending on the size of the church and depending on how bad their pain was when they got a hold of us and how much better it was cars when we finished. They'll never call us back because if you fix it right one time, it'll last you for 10 or 15 years. So if they're a small church that didn't have that big of a pain to begin with, and you came in and did a complete turnkey deal, and they looked at it and thought, you know what, there's three companies we hired this one. They all would have been about the same. These guys were a little better. And we go in and do a $30,000 deal for those guys. We've moved them from a 10 scale from what was a 3 up to about an 8 or 9. They won't need us for 10 or 15 years. Now, there'll be little things that break. There'll be a microphone jack, or they need a new wireless, or this or that or the other. But the thing works so good that they don't have ongoing problems. And probably 2 years later, when they decide to add a mic, they don't remember where they got the thing. You know, we stick our label on stuff, but...
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
Okay, do you have everyone in a database, all your past customers?
Yeah.
They're in a computer, like an Excel file?
They're actually in ACT. We've got name, address, and somebody's phone number. It was the contact person, maybe not somebody at the church, but a committee person.
How many customers do you have in your database?
Well, we got 2,500 contacts in ACT, so probably out of those 2,500, maybe 700 are clients or potential clients.
All right, and most of those are inactive. Once you do the job, you're done with them.
Yeah, now that's the one end. There's the other extreme, a bigger church that's got three or four venues. They've got a gymnasium and a main sanctuary and a chapel and a meeting room. We fix one thing, and all of a sudden they go, wow, these guys get things done, and we own those guys. I mean, we've got probably six or eight of those churches that every time something breaks, they call us. They don't even call anybody else.
Okay. So once you've got them, you proved yourself, they're your client. They don't go anywhere else.
Right. If they remember who we are, and if they've got enough need, then we don't have a problem making sure they call us back because we've done such a good job, as long as they're calling often enough to remember who we are.
Are you contacting your inactive clients on an irregular or regular basis, or are you just waiting for them to call you back when they need something?
We typically wait for them to call us back. We know technologically how to contact them. We know how to work a fax or an email. But what we don't know is, do they want to hear from us every week? Do they want a thing that says, hey, we want to sell you something? Do we want a report every 2 months? Do we want a newsletter? And what's going to be useful to them? And they're pretty varied as far as how they do and what we tell them about. And I'm just thinking, I don't want to be loading them up with stupid junk mail. And so, as an overreaction to that, we never send them anything.
Okay.
I don't know what the right thing to send them is.
Well, you know what? You're not contacting them at all, and that's definitely costing you business because you got to remain in their mind somewhere. Even if it's a simple newsletter, does everyone you deal with usually have an email address?
I'd say three-quarters of them do.
All right. You can put them in an automated email responder that sends them just a quick email that says, hey, it's Frank from Acoustical Design. Just wanted to say hi. Hope everything's going well. If there's anything you need, certainly give me a call. And that email could go to them every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks just to remind them. It's not going to be junk mail. If it's something they're not interested, they're not going to read it. But you need some way to keep in contact with your existing clients. It could be to ask them for a referral every month or how's the lighting working. You know, they've already bought from you, right? If you go in there and analyze what they have currently and look for potential opportunities to sell them equipment, you may see that their projector's 5 years old, and you may let them know, hey, it's Frank, we just came across some projectors. I know you're operating a Sony, blah, 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 and we came across this one, and I just wanted to give you a call and see if you'd consider using it. It's got spectacular lighting, whatever. That's your opportunity to sell them once they've bought. And by reselling more and more proactively rather than just waiting for them to call when there's a problem, you're going to get more money out of them, no doubt. They already trust you and know you and like you, and they've already spent money with you. It's going to be the easiest sale you ever made with an existing customer.
I believe it'll be easy to close them if they have a desire, and I guess my biggest fear and what holds me back from sending them anything is I'm thinking, what should I send them? The only thing I'm willing to send them at this point is a note on a piece of note card, which I've never even done that. It says, we really appreciate you working with us. A lot of people don't see the value that we bring, and we really appreciate the fact that you did see the value. Thanks for everything.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You can send that once, but don't let that be the end of your relationship. It should just be the beginning. You can look for what is this church going to need in the next 3 or 4 years, and you can outline potential things that they need and that you can get for them and that you could sell to them. Now, you could also ask yourself, and this comes into alliance opportunities, okay? The consultants will work with you to look for joint venture opportunities where you may ask yourself, well, I've got this church client, and he trusts me, he respects me, he likes me. He spent money with me. What else is this church buying that I'm not offering that I may be able to set up an alliance with someone else? So you could ask yourself, what else is this church buying? Let's say they're building a whole, I don't know, when these guys call you, are they building on new sections of their church and they need audiovisual stuff?
They're doing one of three things probably. They're either building on a new section of the building, they're building the Family Life Center they didn't have before. They're having problems with their existing system and they think, you know what, it's been 5 years, we really need to replace it, like a remodel job. Or they're changing what they do in the service. In other words, we've always used one microphone, and now we want two. Now we want to do video during the church service.
Now, in the construction process, when they're building on, at what point are they calling you? Has building been done? Everything's done? The whole construction, carpet, all that? Or are they getting you earlier in the process?
They've got to get us before the thing's done.
They do.
They really need to. I mean, very seldom do they call us after the building's built. Frequently, whoever's building their building will either say, hey, I know so-and-so because we build a lot of churches, and I know so-and-so put a sound system in. And this is where one of our competitors gets a lot of work, I think. Yeah, worked with us on this other multipurpose room we built. Since we're building you a multipurpose room, maybe you called, so bingo, he's in the door. Or they look in the phone book and say, we got to call three or four people, or they call some people down the street and say, hey, who have you called when y'all did your sound system? So that's how they get the name of who to call, and then we're back into this mix of, you know, everybody else gets a free plan and ours is costing money.
I'm really talking about cross-selling. What else can you sell your church that you don't offer? When you get in there, what else is this church going to be potentially spending money on? Are they going to be painting the inside? Do they need any construction, any handymen, any kind of service they would need? You could hook up with a service provider and refer them business and take a piece of the action. So you say, well, I don't know what else to sell them other than what I've already sold them. But you can sell them and team up with a provider anything that they would need in the future because you've got the trust.
In other words, I hook up with a painter who does quality work, and when they're doing a new sound system, I say, since you're remodeling the sound system, are you also going to paint the building? And now I could shoot the painting lead over to another guy and... You're saying get some money for that painting lead, or are you get a swap? So every time he goes and sees a church, he sends him a sound system lead to me, and it's a free. Is there money changing hands?
Well, no, it's a referral. So you make an alliance with the painter, for example, and you say, look, I'm in these churches all the time. We install sound systems. Would you be open to working with me if I refer you over some business? Would you pay me a percentage of what I refer? So you can make relationships with other vendors, and if you provide them the lead, take a piece of action. And you don't have to do that, but that's just another way of cross-selling something that you're not offering, okay? But the real power here now, and you started touching on it, is getting referral business from other companies that are providing services, like you've got the company who does the construction of the churches. You should definitely be selling them on you and your service because, you know, if you get two or three companies referring you over, you really wouldn't have to do much of any other marketing because that could keep you plenty busy. Do you see what I'm saying?
In other words, I hook up with the church multipurpose room Construction Company, Inc.
Absolutely.
And I say to them, this is what we do. Here are the problems we solve for the client. And here's why we're good. And when somebody calls and wants you to put them up a multipurpose room, do you mind letting us know so we can help them with the other?
Yeah, and offer them a percentage, 5% of whatever business you do with them. You know, offer them something financially. You refer me, we pay 5% on referrals of the job. It's as simple as that. And if you create all this information on why you're better and why you're unique from everyone else, and you have a website that displays that in an audio recording or a CD, I mean, all you gotta do is make one sale to the guy here handling all the construction. You sell one guy and he can feed you clients for life. You see what I'm saying?
In your mind, it makes good sense for there to be a monetary payoff for the construction company.
Sure.
Just sending them leads. I'm sending them money.
Yeah, you're sending them money.
Okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, say we pay 5 or whatever you think you can afford to send them. Say we pay 10% on referrals. That's sometimes all you need to say. I mean, people, they'll do it for the money. But they want to make sure that you're reliable and you'll have to sell yourself on them.
I don't have any problem in convincing you I'm reliable and I know what I'm talking about. And if I say we paid 5% on the job, see, what I want to do is I want to gift you. I don't want to gift your boss, the owner of your company. I want to gift you personally as well because that's more motivating to you. I want to send you $50, and then the company gets 5% of what we sell or something like that.
Yeah, well, certainly you could do that. The salesperson who's going out and selling these jobs, sure, you can talk to them personally. So you can ask yourself, well, who out there is in front of my ideal potential clients? Who else is out there besides the guy building these constructions for the churches? Just ask yourself, who are my ideal clients, and what other companies or salesmen are pitching my same client who I can work with? And sometimes all it takes is a phone call, introducing yourself, telling them what you do, and saying, hey, can we work together? You may be able to return the favor. You may be able to find a company that you're in, you know, like the painter, for instance. You want to find something that could work both ways, but in some cases, if it only works one way, you use the money to make it work.
Okay. And if it's something that realistically really works both ways, you offer them the choice. Hey, would you rather get money, or would you rather me send you people that are going to spend money?
Yeah, if you find somewhere it works both ways, you could say, hey, let's trade databases. I'll tell you what we'll do. I've got a database of 700 past clients that I've done work for, clients who trust me, like me, and have spent over $10,000 or $20,000 with me. You've got a database of 500 or 600 people that trust you, like you, and have spent X amount of dollars with you. Why don't we each call or endorse each other to each other's list? So you can send a letter or a phone call to each one of your past customers on your list and say, hey, you know, this is Frank Acusco. We haven't talked in a while, but I thought of you when I met this gentleman who provides this service, and I wanted to let you know he's a top-notch guy, and if you're ever looking for this type service, you want to give him a call. Just make sure you tell him that Frank told you to call him, and you can do it a little bit better than that. But you can endorse that vendor to your past clients, since you're not selling anything to them anyway, and then you get them to agree to do the same thing for you with all their clients. So you're trading on the leverage and trust of each one of your businesses, but you're switching your prospects.
Do I have to be careful to only hook up with one painter?
Well, if the painter is going to endorse you to all his past clients, you make sure you're dealing with an honest guy that does great work, you know, someone with a reputation that you know you can feel good about endorsing and referring to your past clients.
And at that point, once I've got one guy, and I do know a painter, actually, that does great work, once I've got the one painter that I endorse and he endorses me, I'm not looking for another painter.
Yeah, you only need one guy. A painter could be just one. So it could be a woodworking guy who does work on big auditoriums that need audio and video and acoustical design work. You want to be talking to the guys who are doing work for people who could become your potential clients down the road.
Right, so I've actually got 20 endorsing alliances out there possible. I've got a painter, a woodworker, a furniture salesman, a carpet guy. I've just got to be cautious not to have two carpet guys.
Yeah, that's right. Just one of each.
Okay, that makes sense. Architects come to mind, but I mean, I guess I see them kind of like doctors.
Absolutely, architects. Anything can be done through a simple direct mail letter.
Yeah, but is an architect going to want to share? I see them as the king of the hill. They think they know everything. They're higher than everybody. And I see them as somebody who wouldn't really be comfortable endorsing anybody.
Architects aren't all the same. They're all individual people. And if they're looking out for their client, and if you've educated an architect of why you outshine every other acoustical design company in your area, and you prove it to him through maybe an audio recording or one of your reports, then you've sold him that he can feel confident referring you as the only choice that that firm uses for acoustical design referrals.
I'm with you. In other words, basically, I've got to show the architect the value of our company.
Yeah, and you got to do it in an automated way, a series of reports, audio recording, your website. You got to have it where you don't have to keep doing it over the phone over and over again. It's got to be automated.
That seems so impersonal.
Oh, no. That's not impersonal. You're doing them a favor. I mean, I don't know if you spend any time on my website, hardtofindseminars.com.
You would laugh if you knew how much time I've spent on your set in the last 3 weeks.
Okay, you have. So you've been listening to lots of audio.
Yeah, I've downloaded probably 15 or 20, and I've got them on my palm so I can just listen to them while I'm driving.
Okay, so you've been listening to me for 15 hours. Did it seem impersonal, or did it seem like me in your car talking to you? Were you listening to the recording? There's nothing impersonal about it if you have some desire or benefit or if you're gaining something by listening.
The reason it wasn't impersonal is because you weren't talking to me. You were talking to somebody else, and I was allowed to eavesdrop.
That's correct.
I'm feeling like I've got all this information now that I used to not have, and honestly, you sound like the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm only the guy asking the questions of most of them. That's right. Well, you could do the same thing, and you want to offer that interview style where your architect can eavesdrop on a brilliant audio engineer and acoustical design engineer, you see?
That's really smart.
Yeah, you can position it the same way. So they're the voyeur looking through the keyhole.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that.
It's not you just say, hey, I'm great. Let me tell you why I'm great.
Yeah, a lot of the sites that have the click to play and you go to the site, I can remember the guy, Alex Mondojan, because every time you see a site again from your last browser, hi, I'm Alex Mondojan, and he's talking to me, and I'm thinking, shut up talking to me. I'm tired of hearing the stupid thing. But your style is more of a third party.
That is right. Absolutely. We've covered from alliance opportunities, cross-selling, keeping in touch with your past customers, creating a good USP, setting up referrals through vendors who are selling your same customers. And there's so many different things you can do, and you can get a small incremental growth on each one of those, but when you combine a small increase with each one of those, you can get a geometrical growth. Michael with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com in another bonus tip. How would you like to turn your $28 book or ebook or even a concept in your head into a $3,900 information product? I'll provide you the secrets on how to do this. If you'd like a completely free 30-day trial of my system for turning your simple book or even just a concept in your mind into an information product that you can sell for $97, $197, or even as much as $3,900 or more. This system includes a whole range of tricks and tips to help you pack your audio program full of great stories that take control of your listeners' brains. My information product creation system comes with my personal guarantee that you'll create an information product worth from $97 to $497 that's designed to sell like hotcakes. This is a 30-day free trial. If you'd like information on this, please email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line, write in all caps, $28 book, and I'll email you information on how to turn your $28 book or even a concept in your mind into a $3,900 information product. Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff, hardtofindseminars.com. Here is another bonus tip and a valuable service that I offer to select clients. If you can talk into an ordinary telephone, you can be selling your own high-priced audio programs in as little as 7 days. This is the easiest way on earth to create a series of powerful audio recordings for your own information product. I call you on an ordinary telephone and interview you live on a series of related hot topics about your niche subject. I take care of all the editing, all the technical stuff, and I give you the finished MP3s or WAV files and audio transcripts. I only have time to give this deluxe personalized service to a few more carefully selected clients. If you're interested in developing and creating your own valuable information products that you could have complete in as short as 7 days and be selling for as high as $300, $500, even $3,900, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, please write info product information in all capital. Make sure I have your name and a way to contact you by phone, and we can talk about your specific ideas. Or you may call me at 858-274-7851. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another bonus tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. It's called an audio infomercial. Your audio infomercial, which I create for you, will sell more products of yours faster, easier, and for less cost than any conventional advertising method, and I guarantee it 100%. Imagine catching yourself at concert pitch talking about what makes your business or your product service unique, what makes it special. Imagine taking a professional recording of that perfect sales presentation that I create for you and giving it to your prospect as an audio CD or an internet download from your website. I can do this for you faster than you ever thought possible with my personal
personalized audio informational recording service. If you're interested in this unique service, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, in all capitals, write audio infomercial, and I will get back with you with more information. Hi, it's Michael Sinoff here with another tip from Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. This tip is one that is dear to my heart, and the reason why is because I know what a difference it can make for your business. It has to do with editing your audio recordings. If you are using audio online or offline to sell, market, and educate your prospects, this tip will be the most important tip you ever hear from me. Editing your audio content before you publish it to your site simply gets better results compared to unedited audio content. Think about this. A new song on the radio may be in the editing studio for months before it's released to the public. A new movie may take years in the editing process before it's released to the big screen or on DVD. Well-written sales letters, online promotions, books, and commercials are all meticulously edited to perfection before they are released. You would never dream of releasing an unedited version of any of these sales vehicles, so why would you publish unedited audio? Unedited audio content is abandoned by the listener faster, it produces less sales for you, and it actually destroys your credibility as a publisher. So why are we seeing so much unedited content proliferating the internet? The reason is simple. There are very few people who offer audio editing services who know what they are doing. Editing audio is kind of like plastic surgery. It's part skill and part an art form. You need someone with both the skill to do it and someone who understands marketing and selling. A poor result can be gained by both a skilled surgeon as well as a good technical editor. Who you choose to do your audio editing can be one of the best investments in your business. At HardToFindSeminars.com, we have been editing online and offline web content for 6 years. We have perfected a proprietary editing system that has been proven to get your customers to listen to your audio content longer and to listen to it more often, resulting in more sales for you more often, and with clean edited audio, you can demand more money for your products and services. It's just like in life, you only have one chance to make a first impression. Every time you release and publish unedited audio content, you are projecting a poor, sloppy, I don't care attitude that turns your prospects off. Do your prospects a favor. Service them. Give them your best. Do them a favor by giving them professionally edited audio messages, interviews, teleseminars, and selling promotions by editing your audio. We provide full audio editing services that are fast and at a reasonable rate. We know that editing your audio content can easily pay for itself 20 times over. Call me, Michael Sinoff, for more information at 858-274-7851. I'll spend some time on the phone with you. We'll determine what audio content you're publishing. I'll be glad to offer you a free consultation on my ideas. I'll review some of your audio, and together we'll come up with a solution that gets you better results. Thanks for listening.